Welcome back. So let me ask you a question. Why do almost one third of Americans have a chronic illness? Why is obesity such an epidemic despite thousands of diet and exercise programs? Is feeling tired and fatigued all the time normal? Well, joining me is Dr. Mark Starr. He's the author of the widely acclaimed book, Hyperthyroidism, Type 2, The Epidemic. Dr. Starr's progressive approach to alternative medicine offers his cutting-edge therapies designed to accelerate the healing of hyperthyroidism. Yes, I said healing of hypothyroidism. Also, chronic fatigue syndrome falls into that category, fibromyalgia, candidiasis, arthritis, many different things. We will be right back to talk with Dr. Mark Starr and about hypothyroidism. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. So let me ask you, what does chronic pain, diabetes, heart disease, menstrual difficulties, and sleep apnea all have in common? Well, as physician Dr. Mark Starr points out in his extensively researched book, Hypothyroidism, Type 2, The Epidemic, there's an excellent chance this collection of various disorders, although they seem unrelated, indicate abnormally low thyroid function. Welcome to the show, Dr. Starr. Thank you for being with me.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the symptoms of hyperthyroidism to start with. What would people notice?
Well, the most common symptoms are fatigue and weakness, joint and muscle pain, cold intolerance, dry, puffy skin, depression, constipation. I mean, it starts when babies are birthed, problems with conceiving as a symptom of low thyroid. And for the first half of the 20th century, GYN doctors gave their patients who had infertility problems desiccated thyroid, and many would conceive. But lack of being able to nurse the baby, even the baby's not thriving well can be a thyroid problem. So right from birth, you can have low thyroid symptoms that are quite profound. As a matter of fact, all the patients that I've seen that were given growth hormones really needed thyroid and ADHD. So everything from birth to the grave, from heart attacks and dementia
And
and Alzheimer's. So, I mean, it just is a myriad thing. So for the first half of the 20th century, for instance, high cholesterol meant you were low thyroid.
it's interesting because each one of the things that you mentioned has its own diagnosis and its own set of medicines and its own set of systems that you go through in order to cure those or heal those particular illnesses. But rarely does anybody put all of these things together under hypothyroidism. How did you originally make this link that all of these different things were related?
Well, I had a wonderful teacher in New York City. He was an MD, PhD endocrinologist named Larry Sonkin at the New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center, one of the most prestigious endocrinology clinics in the whole world. They invented the Pap smear back in the early 1900s,
Wow.
and they thought they were the best of the best. And Dr. Sonkin was one of the best of the best. And he was in his mid-70s when I went to see him and visit and study with him and be treated by him, because I thought I was low thyroid when I was in my residency in my late 30s and early 40s. But even though I was a medical doctor, nobody would treat me because my thyroid blood tests were normal.
Ah.
And so they told me I was working too hard. Despite the fact that I had numerous symptoms, my older brother and my mother were already taking synthetic thyroid, so they'd been diagnosed with hypothyroidism, and it runs in my family. But they insisted that I couldn't possibly have the problem because my blood tests were normal. And so my symptoms worsened over time, but fortunately, I was 45 when I went to New York to study and be treated. And Dr. Sonkin said the blood tests were missing millions of patients who were low thyroid, and I was one of them. And he treated me after examination and taking my history, and it didn't take long for me to get well. I was going to stay in New York for about 6 weeks, and I stayed for 2 years.
Wow, so much there. I want to find out, how you did it and how you got well. But let's talk about the ranges, about the blood test ranges that the endocrinologist reads. Why do most people who are feeling this constant fatigue test within those ranges of as normal?
Well, unfortunately, the first half of the 20th century, doctors were taught to treat the patient's symptoms and not the blood test, because the blood test, actually the first blood test came into being in about 1940. The first tests were called the basal metabolism test, because the thyroid controls the speed and efficiency at which each and every one of our trillions of cells work. So if the metabolism, which is what the thyroid controls, slows down, every cell in our body suffers, and you have all sorts of symptoms. And so the doctors realized that they could test the metabolism by having the patients fast overnight, and according to their age, height, weight, and sex, they would do a study on their basal metabolism or resting metabolism the next morning, and according to their oxygen they inspire and their carbon dioxide they expired, they could tell whether their metabolism was normal or abnormal. Unfortunately, that test was kind of difficult to do, because if you had all sorts of things, including stress and pain, and had to travel a long way to get the test done, it could be
raise erroneous. The cortisol levels. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there was a study done, and only 77% of 100, 77 out of 100 people with definitive low thyroid tested positively on the basal metabolism test. So the first blood test, they looked for more accurate testing that would be easier as well. The first test was in 1940, called the protein iodine, because iodine is a component of the thyroid hormones, and that was used for almost 30 years, and it was proved to be inaccurate in 1967.
Oh.
And there was a famous doctor named Broda Barnes, who did a ton of research and wrote 4 books, and we'll talk about him later. But he said many competent, otherwise competent physicians swore by the protein-bound iodine test, while the rest of us swore at it.
So because it was inaccurate.
The erroneous blood testing began in 1940. The TSH, which has been in vogue and mandated by the Federation of State Medical Boards, has been the standard of care since 1971.
Okay, so that was in the 70s. Now, is it true that these various ranges, they vary per region? So if they're the ranges maybe in Chicago are different than the ranges here in Southern California?
Well, no. Typically, it's in the different countries where the ranges vary, although the ranges do vary some in Sweden. In the United States, if your TSH, the thyroid stimulating hormone, is the TSH, and that if it is elevated, that supposedly means the body needs more thyroid, and that's when it's above 4.6, that is what the doctors have been taught that in America, that that's when you give some thyroid hormones to the patients. In Sweden, I think it's 3.5.
And why is
Googled,
that?
I Googled the Great Britain, because I was under the impression it was much higher there, but maybe they've changed it. It is now 4.5 in Great Britain, so it's pretty close to America's. But there's research in the last print or two of my first book, and I have a new book called Heart Attacks, Heart Failure, and Diabetes, which I hope we get to talk about, because that's all thyroid. And
wow.
I have the reasons why the TSH doesn't work. We know why the TSH doesn't work now.
Because, well, let's go back to the ranges really quickly, because why are they different? Why are the ranges higher here than they are, for example, in Sweden?
Well, there's a long story about the TSH. They used a very small group of supposedly healthy people in order to decide what the normal values for the TSH were. And the TSH levels have changed over time. And so it doesn't matter if your TSH is normal, you can have every symptom in the book for the last 40 years, and yet you're not supposed to treat the patients, because that's what the Federation of State Medical Boards mandate. And they mandate that in Canada, they mandate that in Sweden, and they mandate that all over the Western countries. So doctors can get in big trouble if they don't treat the TSH and use the synthetic thyroid, which they've been doing for 40 years.
Okay, so you mentioned that the synthetic thyroid does not work, and these are things like Synthroid and various different types of synthetic thyroids that are prescribed. I read in your book that it is one of the highest prescribed medications out there. Why do you feel it doesn't work?
Well, there are no clinical studies showing that it relieves symptoms. I did research for 5.5 years the first print of my book. 6 prints later, I would say it's been 6.5 years of research, and I found one study that showed there was no correlation between how severe the patients were and what their blood tests showed. That was the only study that's been done in the last half century to determine whether or not the T4 or the synthetic levothyroxine, levoxyl, Synthroid, Unithroid, basically they're all just one component of the thyroid hormone. And the thyroid is made up of an amino acid called tyrosine and 4 iodine molecules. And in order for it to function properly, the most predominant form that the thyroid gland produces in your body is called T4. It has 4 iodine molecules. But in order for it to work properly, it has to be converted into T3. And that conversion doesn't always work very well, because there are all sorts of things you need to convert T4 into T3. But the doctors are taught that the body automatically converts T4 into T3.
Ah, and it doesn't.
And it doesn't.
So when someone would take one of those levothyroxine, and they would take that, and would that actually lower or put the person within the range that they needed to be on the blood work, but yet the person still felt fatigued, hair loss, dry skin, all the other effects that were along with the autoimmune dysfunction?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about how you just mentioned about heart disease. How could hypothyroidism cause heart disease, or how is it linked to heart disease?
Okay. So there was a wonderful doctor. His name was Broda O. Barnes. There's a research foundation in his name. Broda Barnes, BrodaBarnes.org. He was an MD, PhD endocrinologist. He got his PhD in the physiology of the thyroid gland in 1930 at the University of Chicago. He became an MD in 1937. He did research on patients and animals the rest of his life. He went to Graz, Austria, the second largest city in Austria, had a terrible thyroid problem for many centuries. And the Queen, Maria Theresa, Marie Antoinette's mother, mandated that all deaths in Graz go under autopsy, in other words, to try to find out why the health of the nation was so terrible, the health of the city. And Dr. Barnes found out about that test and went to Graz and studied 70,000 consecutive autopsy studies.
Wow.
And why did he do that? Because none of his patients were having heart attacks, and he thought he knew why. Because two hallmarks of having low thyroid, which they identified before they even had a cure for hypothyroid, they were taking the thyroid gland out of every animal you could imagine, from the jackass to the rabbit, and all would have accelerated hardening of the arteries. And they would start giving them the thyroid glandular back to these animals, and it would stop the progression of hardening of the arteries. So the other thing that happened when they took the thyroid glands out of the animals was that they had accelerated, or they were much more susceptible to infections. And recurrent infections cause inflammation in all parts of the body, especially the arteries.
That's the heart. I see.
And there you go. So Accelerated hardening of the arteries and susceptibility to infection are the two hallmarks of low thyroid.
Well, you said a key thing there. It's the immune system and inflammation. So what about the thyroid gland is linked to the immune system and inflammation?
Sure. Well, if you have infections, then you have a lot of inflammation. The immune system is very energy intensive, and the thyroid produces about 80% of the energy in the body. And in order for the immune system to work properly, you have to have normal thyroid function. And Dr. Barnes did research and has his research in both of my books, clinical studies showing restoration of normal immune function. And almost all of my patients who reach a therapeutic dosage of thyroid get rid of having or, no longer have chronic infections over and over and over and over and over again. I see that. So Dr. Barnes realized the heart attacks were quite rare when Dr. Barnes was in medical school in the 1930s. And by the after World War II, they just shot up in occurrence over 900% in about 25 years. And Dr. Barnes thought he knew why, because none of his patients who he treated properly with a thyroid were having any heart attacks. So why did heart attacks explode in the late 1940s? Dr. Barnes' autopsy studies proved the reasons. So for many thousands of years, smallpox, plagues, and then tuberculosis picked off all the people who had poor immune systems, basically all the people who were low thyroid. So for thousands of years, the thyroid population was weaned. Like half to two-thirds of the population would die at an early age.
It was interesting.
It was very rare to have somebody lived over the age of 60.
Because of the thyroid population diminishing, and that particular... Now, you said that those people had those their thyroids taken out?
No. They started doing research. They realized that the first doctor who diagnosed the illness of hypothyroidism was in the 1870s. And there was a big 200-page report in 1888 that I reference in my book, which was quite profound. But the first cure was 1891, but they never took out... Well, they take out people's thyroid glands for cancer and different things, but not back in the late 19th century. But Dr. Barnes realized that none of his patients were having heart attacks. The rest of the population in America, their heart attacks were exploding, and the American Heart Association started a study called the Framingham Study in 1948. Dr. Barnes started his study 2 years later in 1950, a long-term study to mirror the Framingham study. Framingham study included 5,000 people who were found to be healthy, basically, in Framingham, Massachusetts. They volunteered to do a heart attack study, and they would republish the results every few years. And Dr. Barnes started his study with his group of patients in 1950. So according to the Framingham study, after 20 years, he had 1,569 patients, different ages and sexes and risk factors, high blood pressure. Males were more prone to have heart attacks, they found. Diet wasn't really involved in having heart attack, the Framingham study found. But according to the Framingham study, he should have had 74 heart attacks over those 20 years. He had 4 heart attacks.
And he didn't.
So over 90% of heart attacks were avoided. And not only that, they were able to follow the patients who dropped out of the study. And 30 patients who had dropped out of the study had fatal heart attacks within 6 years of dropping out of the study.
Because they were not taking the thyroid supplements.
That's correct.
Interesting.
They stopped taking the thyroid.
Interesting. So there was a deep link there. I want to talk with you a little bit about the genetic aspect of hypothyroidism. And you mentioned it's a generational type of thing. And I wonder if it can be, if that chain can be broken at all. Does it matter if there is a family that's mostly located in the Midwest, or if they move to California or the West Coast, where there tends to be more iodine? Do they lessen or reduce their genetic propensity for thyroid illness? We're going to find out that when we come back from the break, and we're going to take a quick break. My guest is Dr. Mark Starr. The name of the book is called Hypothyroidism Type 2, the epidemic. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. So are you experiencing blood sugar disorders, high cholesterol, dental problems, fatigue, lethargy, gastrointestinal disorders, heart conditions, hoarseness of voice, mental and emotional problems? How is it possible that the malfunction of one tiny gland can influence so many other functions that do not seem to be related to each other? That's exactly what we're talking about tonight with Dr. Mark Starr. His latest book is called Hypothyroidism Type 2, The Epidemic. There are another 20 different types of symptoms here and conditions that seem unrelated, but yet we're talking tonight about how they can be related. So stay with us. We will be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back. This is Lisa Gar. Welcome back to Coast AM. And we're talking about hypothyroidism. Now, if you are one of those people who have tried every diet and exercise program out there, but you still cannot seem to budge the weight, or you're feeling tired and fatigued more than normal, and you think it's stress-related or situational, Dr. Mark Starr says that hypothyroidism is the base of many, many different types of conditions. And we were talking before the break about the genetic link between relatives and various different types of generations having to do with hypothyroidism. Is it genetic, Mark, and how can you turn off that genetic marker? Is it even possible?
I have seen some mothers who gave birth to normal thyroid patients despite the fact that they were low thyroid, but it's rare in my experience. There has been a genetic correlation for centuries of whole families dying out because of infertility, for instance. Hashimoto's, which is the when your thyroid attacks, your body attacks your own thyroid, definitely has a familial or tendency to be genetic. But let me apologize for correcting you, but my Hypothyroidism Type 2 book has been out for about 10 years. It had 6 prints. And I'm not going to print anymore because I was tired of working on it after 9 or 10 years. And my new book is called Heart Attacks, Heart Failure, and Diabetes, Prevention and Treatment.
Nevertheless, it is very relevant, the hypothyroidism, and it is a very important conversation. And of course, the heart disease and heart attacks and diabetes also have the underlying condition of hypothyroidism, correct?
Sure. Oh, yes. My first book is almost 300 pages. My new book, the text is only 68, so it's just chock full of research and x-rays.
So let's go back to the genetics about it. So if you feel that they're linked, can you do anything to turn off that marker?
Well, unfortunately, as you know now, it's hard to, Broda Barnes in 1976 when he published his Hypothyroidism, The Unsuspected Illness, said that he thought 40% of all Americans, men, women, and children, had low thyroid, and in 10 years it would be half of our population. And one of my smartest doctor friends is named Jerry Tennant, and he uncovered the research showing that the fluoride in the water, for instance, slowly destroys your thyroid gland. So even if you're born normal thyroid, if you drink fluoridated water over decades, it will slowly but surely destroy your thyroid gland.
Wow. Why?
And
how?
On top of that, well, it's poisonous, number one. Mm-hmm. And fluorine is in a group of chemicals in the periodic chart called halides. And halides at the top of the chart, which means they have a very strong receptor affinity, include the iodine, but above iodine is fluorine, chlorine, and bromine, which are all toxic to the body. And I know you wanted to talk about iodine, but Dr. Tennant found research showing that we can have fake thyroid hormones because the fluorine displaces the iodine, and there's very little, so it has a higher affinity for the iodine receptor than does the iodine. So he found research showing that the thyroid hormones can be basically fake thyroid hormones because they contain 4 fluorine molecules instead of 4 iodine molecules. And that's how the iodine helps destroy the thyroid, because it collects in the thyroid.
Oh, because I've always heard that iodine is like gasoline on the fire where it comes to Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism. But does it matter? Is it just for Hashimoto's, or is it for both?
Some of my learned friends that do what I do, the doctors who treat thyroid like I do, think that Hashimoto's may be one of the main causes, may be iodine deficiency. Yes, a whole lot of folks with Hashimoto's have difficulty tolerating the iodine, and I recommend everybody who wants to try iodine by itself, because everybody needs iodine. Almost every cell receptor in the body has iodine receptors. It is our number one bug killer in the body. Every orifice in our body where bugs can get in has very high iodine levels, or at least they're supposed to have very high iodine levels. So in order to displace the fluorine and the chlorine and the bromine is what's in standard bread products these days. It used to be iodine was put into the bread, but the FDA stopped that practice in the 1960s. So, you know, almost everybody has chlorine in their water, and fluoridated water is pervasive in our country. They don't have it in Europe or Canada, but somehow we keep spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. We spent $600,000 this year to put it back in our water here in Phoenix, despite doctors writing, trying to advise them not to. It's basically the dogma that it lowers teeth decay. But they don't have any more teeth decay in Canada or Europe than we do, and they don't have fluoride in the water.
Wow. Now, you said 50% of the population could have hypothyroidism, might be undiagnosed, but that's what your colleagues have determined?
That's what Dr. Barnes, who was like, his nickname was Mr. Thyroid. Mm-hmm. He was an MD, PhD endocrinologist. I'm a pain doctor, basically, a physical medicine and rehab doctor. I got into thyroid because nobody would treat me for my symptoms, and I was fortunate enough to meet Dr. Hans Krauss, who was President Kennedy's last pain doctor, wrote the Diagnosis and Treatment of Muscle Pain book, didn't operate his last 50 years, got rid of President Kennedy's back pain after 3 failed back surgeries, and I had a fractured back playing high school football and chronic pain.
Wow.
And I was lucky enough to be treated by and taught by Dr. Krauss when he was 90 years old in the last year of his life. He was still working 2 days a week with Dr. Norman Marcus at the Norman Marcus Pain Institute in Manhattan. And I told Dr. Krauss my story and about my symptoms of low thyroid, and he sent me to Dr. Sonkin. He had worked with Dr. Sonkin for decades because that's how he got to be President Kennedy's doctor. President Kennedy had adrenal deficiency called Addison's disease and low thyroid, and Gene Cohen was his endocrinologist, and he also worked with Dr. Krauss. So these wonderful doctors knew that hormone problems caused all sorts of pain issues, including headaches and migraines and arthritis. For the first half of the 20th century, if you had arthritis, they gave you thyroid hormones.
Really?
And two-thirds of the patients would get well.
And get better. So pain is directly related to thyroid issues as well. Your ability to recover from an accident or from a regular sports or an exercise and so forth, that type of sustained pain from normal activity is directly related to hypothyroidism?
Slow wound healing is one of the many symptoms.
Right.
For instance, if bones don't heal, Dr. Krauss, my wonderful teacher, was a fracture surgeon. And back in the 30s and 40s, he was the first to mobilize sprain strains and fractures. He was an Olympic ski doctor for decades. Mm-hmm. He said the best way to heal a fracture was to wish it together and start exercising it. There are all sorts. He's got a sports injuries handbook that's out there.
Wow.
That I highly recommend, because he was mobilizing sprain strains and a limited amount of fractures. My dad was over 80. He had osteoporosis and rheumatoid arthritis. And fractured, had a really bad fracture called a surgical neck fracture of his humerus. His upper arm snapped when he fell going up the stairs. And Dr. Krauss, I'd already come home from studying in New York, and I injected some lidocaine in there and started having him do some light exercises right away. And the bone healed in 6 weeks.
Interesting. Interesting.
And, so, yeah, despite he was hypothyroid and had so anyway, there was these wonderful doctors. Yeah, they knew that hormones and pain went hand in hand. As a matter of fact, Dr. Sonkin got mad at me one time because I asked him if his pain patients were harder to treat than Dr. Krause's pain patients, because Dr. Krause used all sorts of trigger point injections and exercises, and all Dr. Sonkin did was give out the hormones.
Okay, so let's talk about the hormones. So you're talking about the desecrated glandular hormones, not necessarily the synthetic hormones, correct?
Well, the best research that I could find in my 6 years of study was by one family in Belgium. Besides Dr. Barnes' research, there's been one wonderful Belgian family called the Hertogs, four generations now of endocrinologists. I have their before treatment and after treatment pictures in both of my books. And the third generation endocrinologist did some studies that are in both of my books showing that they were able to reduce the joint and muscle pain when they switched people who came to their clinic in Belgium who had already been started on the synthetic T4. But everybody is bound to prescribe these days because doctors all over the world can get in trouble for giving desiccated thyroid, and they aren't even able to in many countries.
Is it an over-the-counter, or, I mean, a prescription, or is it?
Oh, yes, it's prescription strength. It was first made by the Armour Meat Company. The pig thyroid glands were taken out, and the Armour Meat Company dried them. Desiccated means dried. And Armour Thyroid has been around for about 100 years now, and for the first half of the 20th century, it was the only thyroid doctors could use.
Now, wasn't Armour taken off of the shelves for a little while, about a year ago?
It was reformulated several years ago. They used to make tablets up to 5 grains, and by the way, in Dr. Barnes' heart attack study, where he eliminated over 90% of heart attacks, his dosages in that study ranged from 2 grains to 5 grains. And desiccated thyroid is so old, it was measured in grains, just like gunpowder is.
Right.
So 1 grain is about 65 milligrams.
Still is measured in grains, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's you know, the T4 is measured in micrograms because it's a synthetic part. So the glandular thyroid has all T4, T3, T2, T1 and some other glandular products in it, usually.
Really?
And so it's a much more, with the synthetic stuff, once, for instance, if somebody has Hashimoto's, you shouldn't use the glandular in the vast majority of the patients because the body's already attacking its own thyroid and giving more. The pig thyroid is almost identical in DNA to our own thyroid. So giving more glandular thyroid can exacerbate the symptoms and you don't get well. So you have to use compounded from a compounding pharmacy, T4 and T3. You can only get the T4 and T3. They don't make T2 and T1. But T4 and T3 works really well for the patients with Hashimoto's.
How would you get a compounded T4, T3 combination? What is that in the form of?
It has to be made by, well, actually they have... they have forms that are available and by prescription that are not compounded. Cytomel is T3. That has been around since the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
Synthroid, of course, is T4, or Levoxyl or levothyroxin is the generic. That's also been around since about the 1960s. They were able to synthesize the T4 and mass produce it in the 1960s, so it was mandated that everybody use it by 1970. Hint, hint, which is what my new book is about. When medical treatments don't make sense, the answer is always dollars and cents, which is the prologue in my book. And I have exactly how many trillions of dollars and, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars are involved with each of these things.
Let's talk about that, because if they are requiring this amongst many, many people, what are the dollars and cents around this? What is the big business around thyroid medication?
So I started doing some research when I did this book, and the gross domestic production, the GDP in America, about 18% is devoted to health care. And to put that in perspective, the military budget is about 4.4%.
Wow. Okay.
So we're talking huge amounts of money, and that's just in America. You know, all the Western countries, have at least one-third the cost of ours for their medical programs in their countries. So you can multiply your American numbers by quite a bit. For instance, I read recently that Alzheimer's patients are going to cost over $1 trillion a year in America by 2050. So that's going to be my next book, is about Alzheimer's. But heart attacks, you know, I've got all the research in there about what how much the country spends on heart attacks, heart failure, and diabetes, and how much is predicted down the road. So I'd have to find that.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, your bottom line here is that the medication that is being prescribed is going to be prescribed even more and more and more. But I'm more interested in why they have taken these supplements that we need, like iodine, out of foods and added more of the supplements that we don't need, like fluoride, into the water supply. What is the reasoning behind that?
In the conclusion of my book, I have a lot of references about how the government and the FDA are not protecting our citizens. So I would refer you to the conclusion in my book for a lot of that, because, you know, it's all about the money. That's what my new book is about.
Can you explain that to us?
Well, that's how the world works. Greed, you know, ego, money. That's what the, you know, the bottom line is. So let's see.
So that's, I mean, that's the bottom line here, is what we're talking about, is this is why this conversation is so relevant. We have 50% of the population who have any one of these 25-odd conditions that I've mentioned throughout the show. We have a diminished food supply. We have an increase in the amount of money spent through our healthcare system to distribute these types of drugs. So this is a situation that is incredibly relevant to us, because we need to take control of our own health. What you're recommending here is knowledge, first of all, to understand that these individual related these individual conditions are indeed related. They might have the commonality of hypothyroidism, and there are some pretty simple solutions to this. First, it needs to be addressed. And your main solution, what we're talking about here, is the desiccated glandular. And that would be in the form of any type of glandular that you can find, the porcine, and these are the forms of armathyroid, natrothyroid. Are those the ones that you're talking about?
Yes, I even use compounded, because a lot of patients these days have really bad allergies that seem to be associated with low thyroid. The problem is doctors lose their licenses in Sweden and Canada and America if they start prescribing desiccated thyroid. When I started my pain clinic after 2 years of study in New York, I took insurance my first 5 years, and I found out that the insurance companies would not pay for my thyroid treatments because it wasn't standard of care.
Right.
So they turned down all my charges. They did not reimburse me for my trigger point injections. I learned by Dr. Krauss. Mm-hmm. From Dr. Krauss and Dr. Marcus, because I didn't use any steroids. So I lost $120,000 my first 5 years of medical practice.
Wow.
I could not have done what I've done the last 16 or 17 years had I had a wife and children. I had enough health problems myself. I never married or had any kids, so I've been able to squeak by. A doctor came to my clinic yesterday wanting to refer patients and learn more about what I do, because he wasn't happy with his, he owns some acute care clinics in Arizona, and he wanted to help his patients more. I said, the first thing you have to do is get a homeopathic MD license like I have in Arizona, because there are only two states that are not under the thumb of the Federation of State Medical Boards in this country, Arizona and Nevada. So I would encourage any doctor who wants to do holistic alternative medicine to look into the homeopathic MDH.
Interesting. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to continue this conversation about hypothyroidism with Dr. Mark Starr. We'll be right back.